Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hey, everyone. Have you been to the Organic Gardener Podcast website and signed up for our email list? If you go there, you will get my new PDF, 7 Awesome Ways to Find More Time in Your Garden. And it's just some tips that I've learned from listening to my amazing guests who are always sharing with us super effective ways to be a better gardener. So if you head over to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and enter your email, you'll get 7 awesome ways to find more time in your garden. You can also get a copy of our ebook of Organic Gardening Basics. And just all the show notes are there, all the links to our show. So, and I'll be sending out some Golden Seeds newsletters as I get them done. And of course, you'll get a special invitation to join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook community. Hope to see you there. So welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. It's a beautiful, sunny, kind of going to be a hot day, June 7th in Montana. So I'm super excited to introduce this guest. We're going to talk about some regular things, but also she's a very forward-thinking entrepreneur who started a business called Dirt Rich Composting. And we all know I love to compost. It's one of the few gardening chores that I really enjoy, and it's pretty easy for me, so that's part of why I like it. So to talk to us today about her gardening journey and her business is Alyssa LaChance from Columbia Falls, Montana. Or, well, that's where the business is, so we'll find out a little more maybe about where she's really from, if that's where she's from. I don't know. Anyway, welcome to the show, Alyssa.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, we're super excited because you're one of those forward-thinking entrepreneurs starting a new business model that maybe some listeners, well, you know, I have a lot of listeners in the Kalispell area, so maybe some will want to use some of your services. Mm-hmm. And then if they're like in another state or far away, maybe it will give them an idea, a business idea of something they might want to start. But go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all.
So my name is Alyssa LaChance. I'm 26. Grew up in Whitefish, Montana. Left and traveled for a while after high school and ended up finally deciding to go to school. And I went to Missoula for an environmental studies degree and spent a lot of time farming. And I have gardened for about 7 years. So I spent a lot of time farming and was in the sustainable ag sector of the environmental studies degree. And moved back here right after my degree, and I started this company with a partner originally, Rachel Gerber. She had the idea, and I kind of had the push forward, so we started working on it together. And immediately got a contract with Zantera, the concessionaire of Glacier National Park, awesome. And that kind of got us going.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's awesome to hear that Zantera is interested, especially that takes care of Glacier National Park there. What are they in charge of, like, the when people come and stay at the lodge and things like that, right?
Yeah, so I kind of had to figure it out myself. They are separate from the National Park Service. They are literally a separate entity that had to bid to be able to, run all of the lodges and the restaurants within Glacier National Park. And, so they provide the services.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so tell us a little bit about the business.
So right now the business model itself is based off of a product. So I'm selling a compost product focused on perennials and annuals. I'm definitely still learning as I go, but we've got some pretty solid products coming out. And also the other edge of that is food scrap pickup service. We wanted to provide a local, really great, rich source of compost to the valley, as well as a food scrap pickup service to the valley, because there's really no option for composting your food scraps unless you're doing it yourself. And we kind of live in a wildlife corridor here in the Flathead Valley, so that's become an issue on a lot of different levels.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So lots of great things to talk about there. So a food scrap pickup service. So does that mean you go to like people's houses or like businesses, like restaurants, like cafeterias?
Mm-hmm. So right now we offer residential and commercial pickup service. We've really just got a couple handfuls worth of residential customers that I pick up from once a week every Monday, provide them with a 5-gallon bucket and a compostable liner each week. They do the cleaning out of the bucket, but I pick up their compost or their food scraps in their liner and provide them with a new bio bag is what we use. And it's, depending on where they live, $20 to $30 a month. And essentially, you know, we're losing money on that. It's just to provide an option for the community if they really don't have time to compost their food scraps and they don't want to throw it away. And the sustenance, like what really provides us with the financial ability to survive as a business right now is the commercial aspect of the food scrap pickup. So I'm approaching lots of different restaurants, you know, throughout the season when it feels right, and I have the time throughout running the other aspects of the business to reach out to different restaurants and say, hey, this is what we're doing. It's really building momentum. And the people who sign on, we provide with a 48-gallon or 32-gallon bin, depending on how much space they have in their restaurant and how much food they produce, food scrap they produce. And each week we pick up from them 3 times a week, clean their bins out for them each time, provide them a new liner, and really just do everything for them. We're trying to make the service as simple as possible because I found that, you know, transitions like this, especially in this kind of an area, towards a more sustainable and relatively alternative option, such as food scrap composting, is alternative here, you know. You really have to make it as easy as possible for people, especially business owners, because they don't want to deal with anything else. So it's a really solid system that we have going, and then we take their food scraps 3 times a week and compost them at our site in Columbia Falls.
Excellent. I'm super interested because I happen to be working at a golf course up here in Eureka this summer. And I have to say, it's one of the best, like the people who I'm working for, it's like the nicest company since I worked at Apple. Like my boss is super nice. Her boss is super nice. And they've been very like, they're totally into letting me and one of the other cooks takes home the recycling. The compost. They let us take all the lettuce scraps and eggshells and coffee grounds and just anything we save. They were totally from day one. They're like, we don't care. Yeah, if you guys want to do that, that's great. Because I've worked other places where they're not very, you know, they're much more concerned with like, then people are going to be stealing food and this and that. And so they were just, you know, very helpful and agreeable. So, but when I see the waste that could be going out, or like on the days when I'm not working or somebody's not there before I get there, what's in the garbage when I get there sometimes, because I just think, oh my goodness, this is like, and to me it's like they're throwing away gold. I'm like, do you realize that you're throwing this away? And this could be like, you know, you could be growing food, and you know, especially on a golf course, you know, they could be using it for their beds. You know, there's tons of landscaping going on, and but I haven't really approach them about talking about them actually doing the composting thing yet. But so I'm excited to hear that. And because especially, like I said, as I see how much waste just this one little restaurant's going through, because it is, because it's a golf course, it's just a clubhouse. So they're not really, you know, they don't have a ton of business, especially not yet. I think it's going to pick up here real quick. But even still, they still go through a ton of food waste. So I would think down there in the Fahab, where there are way more restaurants, that's a great thing. And then especially here in Lincoln County, we haul our garbage like 65 miles. Our garbage site is in Troy. And so that's over 65 miles from here. So we're hauling this garbage anyway. So it would make a lot more sense to have businesses composting it. And then I think that's great. So then do people then in turn, like the people that you're picking it up from, do they use the do they come and get compost from you for their gardens at some other point, or they're not doing that yet? Or
You know, that's the hope, that at some point some of them will become a little more interested in just experimenting with growing things on site. Emmanuel Lutheran's community in Buffalo Hills, kind of retirement community in Kalispell, has that idea. Chef Nelson, awesome guy, really forward-thinking, is hoping to at some point be buying back our compost and have some sort of a garden there to supplement their the produce that they're using in their food. But, you know, that hasn't been...
Did you see there's a Glacier Bank community garden going in right around the corner from, I think that's where Buffalo Hills, right there. It's like right on the corner from FECC on that back road there.
Oh,
Glacier Bank community garden. And isn't that right where Buffalo Hills is, kind of like right past FECC there?
Yep, pretty close. I have not noticed it. I know FECC has a new big ag program. I don't know if that's affiliated.
It said Glacier Bank Community Garden. I just happened to be like taking that back road from, I don't know, like the, you know, Target Shopping Center, Glacier. I don't know. I guess I was at Glacier Bank, you know, up there on the hill by the Blue Cow. Mm-hmm. And there's that back road that goes over by FECC.
Sure.
And I just happened to like go around the corner and some guy was planning it. It looks like a pretty big, but it had a big Glacier Bank sign on it. So
interesting.
Just somebody they might want your compost. You could be interested or something there. I don't know. Anyway,
yeah,
well, cool. Okay. So how did that go, reaching out to chefs? Because I've been thinking about that a lot as I've been reading like Curtis Stone's book, and I just was reading Anastasia's Farm on the Roof book, and they talk a lot about selling their food. And so does Richard Riswell, who has a business in Vermont. A lot of people talk about selling to chefs and that culinary herbs are a good business to get into. So what was that like, reaching out to chefs in the Flathead?
About participating in the food scrap pickup program?
Yeah.
You know, it's been really mixed. It's interesting because a lot of people are excited about this.
Nice.
And some people are just so on. Some chefs are very much on board. And I've found multiple different things. They're not in control of the finances. So they have to go through some higher-ups that are running the fiscal operation, the fiscal aspect of the operation, and they have to say yes or no. And generally, it comes down to the bottom line, and they say no. Unless they have a chef or somebody that's really spearheading it and they're really passionate about it and they have more say in the decision than different other restaurants for some reason. And let's see, what else have I found? You know, that's been initially the most uncomfortable part for me personally is...
That's why I asked you about it, because it'd be an uncomfortable part for me. And so I figure other people...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, initially people are, what I hear them sometimes when I come in, oh, is it a salesman? You know, and I so don't see myself as a salesman, but I could see that question coming up. And at first it made me really uncomfortable, the first 6 months or so. And my partner at the time was really doing most of the approaching. And now I have recently bought her out of the company, and that's my job. I'm doing everything. And I feel very confident and comfortable with it now because I have been doing this for enough days and have gone through the process enough times and have had enough restaurants sign on and feel so confident and happy with the process that I know that they would be excited once it started going and they saw that their employees were happy about it and encouraged that their employer was making this decision that they felt like was responsible and wasn't just about the bottom line. It's encouraging for people to see that, you know, instead of just feeling like it's always just their bosses trying to be as cheap as possible, you know, and they feel like they're doing something good at their job for the community. And they find that the food doesn't stink and it's not a huge inconvenience because the system is really solid at this point as far as the pickup service. So I found that it's become easier for me to approach people now that I'm much more confident in my abilities and the system that we are providing. And now at this point, more confident in the product that we're producing. Originally, at the beginning of the season, that part had me a little worried because this was the first season, we're just about a year old, where people were really calling us for a product. And yeah, so that's a whole other aspect of the business too. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go ahead and move on there. I'm so proud of you and just, I'm super excited. I know listeners are going to be really happy too, because I think we all go through that. We're a little nervous in the beginning and it's hard to be confident about something. And then the way that you're talking about your systems are coming down and just, like I said, you know, you're just a really nice, forward thinking, one of those rock star millennials I'm always talking about and just, inspiring. So now then tell us about the product. Now the product, you take the food scraps, but then you, like I saw there's pictures of straw or hay or something, and you must be, what else are you mixing with? Do you mix wood chips or anything, or what? I'll be quiet. Tell us about the product.
Well, you know, I'm really following Elaine Enum, that a really well-known soil scientist, and actually taking a lot of her online courses through the Soil Food Web, I guess, website and community. So I'm really trying to focus on spreading the word throughout the community and focusing on my product as something that's based on the biology of the compost rather than the chemical makeup. I feel like that's something that for so many generations now, agriculture has focused on. It wasn't always that way, but agriculture has started focusing more on that. And I really want to bring it back to the life that's in the soil, because that's really what's driving our ability to grow food in a more sustainable and functional way. So yeah, our product, we are selling right now perennial compost and annual compost. So perennials generally like soil that is more fungally dominated, and so some of our piles are much more wood chip based, and those are the perennial piles. So, you know, probably the carbon material that we use is about half wood chips, you know, in the perennial piles, whereas in the annuals, we are using maybe a sixth or a seventh wood chip. And the rest of what's in the perennial pile is obviously food scrap, grass cuttings, leaves, garden cutback, lots of manure right now. We really just use what's being brought to us by the community and needs to be composted. That's also what we offer, is a site for people in Columbia Falls and throughout the Flathead Valley to bring their waste material and organics that they don't want to be throwing into the landfill, and they don't want to take the time to burn or who knows what. So we actually have a gravel pit set up for people that it is used constantly every day in the summer, where people, landscapers, everyone drop off all of their waste materials, like grass clippings from the day or garden cutbacks that they don't want to throw away. And so we use whatever we have the most of. And we try and make sure and really put out there, like, hey, we don't want anything that's been treated with pesticides and herbicides. But, you know, it's hard to regulate. But so we're adding whatever is available to us in those piles. And I also reach out to different ranchers and farmers and get old hay, whatever we're not receiving, so we can supplement that supply.
Nice. So were there, like, I'm so curious about the landscapers bringing you grass clippings. Like, are there landscapers down there that specifically tell their customer or know which customers are, or maybe there's landscapers that, like, they do the whole thing and they know they are not putting any chemicals on the,
yeah.
Do you not know?
No, I've definitely talked to a lot of people, you know, there's definitely some people that drop off that I don't know, but there's quite a few people that drop off, and I know most of their faces, and I've had direct contact with a lot of them. And there's some people that are a little bit more iffy. You know, I've just asked them to make sure that it's been at least a year, you know, and they do keep track most of the time. And a lot of people are like, yeah, I'm really, they're close with their clients and customers, and they're like, I've really made sure that for my own business, that I'm encouraging my clients not to be using those synthetic herbicides or pesticides So they kind of made
nice.
It nice to do that. Yeah.
Awesome. I like to hear that. Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Okay. Is there anything I'm forgetting or anything else you want to mention about that? So where did you get this land from that you're having this big, that you have a place that these people, like, is it your land? Are you leasing it? Are you renting it? Like, how do you have a place where people can drop all this stuff off?
Well, we've got investors, a couple, investors right now. That's what we should talk about, actually, is okay. the political aspect of this, because people need to know about it.
Okay.
In Montana.
It's perfect, because today's election day.
Yeah, exactly. In Montana, throughout this process, I've found that it's incredibly challenging for anybody to start a food scrap composting company. And this has become somewhat of a political, I wouldn't call it battle, but struggle for me personally and for our business, because we are kind of, I don't know if other people have tried to do what we're doing and what I'm doing, but I know that right now no one else is, and I can see why. Because if I had to get a bank loan for this, if I didn't have private investors, this would never happen. There's too much startup cost involved and too little direct and immediate interest to be able to sell this to a bank to get a loan from them. It's too unpredictable as far as if it's going to catch on and how long it would take. As far as regulation right now in Montana, working with the DEQ has been an absolute nightmare.
Really?
Yeah, absolute nightmare. I'm an environmental studies major. I have nothing against regulation. I think it's important. And they are, I'm sure, trying to do the best they can and just doing their job. And there is no category for something like this, really. They have the quote-unquote large composter's permit and the small composter's permit. Small composter's permit is what my partner and I had originally, you know, we're both pretty smart, intelligent women. We looked through all of the paperwork and all of what entailed, you know, signing up as a small composter's permit versus a large composter's permit. Small composter's permit was based off of the size of your land plot, how much you're processing per year, what you're accepting, where you're located. And we fell into that category, just having read through everything. And that is low cost. It's just processing the application. You know, the time it takes for them to do that, I imagine. And so we sent that in originally, and imagine us trying to get this together to within weeks to make this happen with this huge company, you know, to get this contract with Vantera, or else this business is not going to happen, you know. And we wanted this for the Valley really bad. And you know, we waited months to hear back from the DEQ, whether we got our large or our small composter's permit, back and forth, impossible to get a hold of them most of the time. And when they said, yep, it looks like a go, the small composter's permit is looking good, once we finally got a hold of them, just like, move on, you know, continue. And then about a month later, we got an email or call from them, hey, actually, you're not going to fit into the small composter's permit. This isn't going to work. You need to apply for the large composter's permit, which is a huge undertaking. It's essentially like applying to be a landfill. And you pay about $7,000 at least just to apply for this large composter's permit. Mind you, we're composting on 2 acres. We are not a large composting facility. We're not a municipal composting facility. And then annually, it's like upwards of $2,000. For a small business, that's make or break, you know. And they would not have it. I mean, I held out for as long as I could and said, hey, this is insane. You know, you should not be putting this kind of fiscal burden on people trying to, you're the DEQ, trying to start something important and forward-thinking for the Valley and for Montana. Because it's backwards in my mind. The DEQ should be there to be encouraging anything like this, businesses like this to be flourishing. And I understand that there's risks for the community and for the environment. Leaching, it could be an issue if people aren't composting correctly. It could affect some of the surrounding people's water supply. But that's really the main issue that I saw them even talking about. But, I met with John Tester a little while ago for a young entrepreneurs roundtable.
Cool.
I got invited to speak with him, and I brought it up. I said, this is a huge issue right now. And he said, wow, that sounds crazy. And he said something along the lines of, the regulation and the fees involved with regulation should be on the same level of the amount of risk to the community that this operation could pose. And I see this as very inconsistent with the risk that could be imposed upon the community with starting a small composting facility. So just so everybody knows, that's a huge issue. And, I've been speaking with different very smart, very driven, very intelligent individuals across Montana, one specifically in Bozeman, who wants to start something like this. And, he doesn't know if he can because of that. Yeah.
So what did you end up doing?
I'm still waiting to hear back from them about the large composter's permit, and I'm trying to stay in touch with John Tester. He's trying to make some calls and see. I'm just trying to be as present as I can to see if I can help shift this regulation or shift these guidelines so that it's more it's encouraging these kinds of operations to start in a responsible way, people who know what they're doing and can serve the community in a good way. They need to make sure of that, but so that it can actually be a possibility for people to start something like this. And I'm still waiting.
I would think somebody with a degree from U of M in environmental studies would be somebody who would know what they're doing and know how to do it properly. And I just can't even really imagine to me, the only hazard could be an animal getting in there, like the bear, do you have to have a fence around it? Like our green boxes up here have to have a fence around them to try to keep the bears out, which I don't know, to me, half of them do, half of them don't. And but what's going to leach out of compost? Like if somebody put something in there that's not supposed to be in there?
These compost piles are high nitrogen content, so it could be nitrogen leaking into the underground water system in too large of amounts. Any kind of phosphorus, any kind of, what would generally be a nutrient.
But I mean, this stuff's going into the landfill. Oh, I guess they must have one of those permits or something. But I mean, I don't know. It just seems
No. There's a lot of issues with that that I agree. I take with because
that's worse, right? That this
isn't definitely.
It worse to have the food go into the landfill.
Oh, it's definitely worse. I mean, I've had to do a lot of my own personal study on all of this, and because I only really am a person that does what I'm passionate about and what I think is truly worth my time and energy, and this is. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're lining these beds in the landfill with these liners that are supposed to help with leaching and all these things. They break all the time. There's huge issues with landfills, and I can't speak for this local landfill. I don't know enough. I've heard that it's run pretty responsibly, but, working on such a massive scale with so much waste, it's impossible not to have issues. And when you, just as a side note, when you're throwing these things like food scraps, which is generally 35 to 75% of landfill waste, is food scraps or organics that should be used for something progressive and important for the community. There's no such thing as waste until you make it such. And it essentially, if there's not enough air in these landfill things that are being covered or covered with trash or whatnot, it goes anaerobic. The environment of the landfill goes anaerobic, which if you don't already know, it means there's not enough air filtration into these systems. And these organic wastes, if they don't have enough air filtering into them, they become anaerobic. That is when the worst bacterial, fungal, any kind of microbial, friends or like attachments to those food wastes start to develop when there's no air. Essentially, they're toxic. They're toxic to any living thing.
Right?
So
yeah, that's why I thought.
That's why it's so important to keep compost piles aerobic, which is filtered with air, or else it goes putrid. So they're essentially just creating toxic sludge in the landfill. You know, that word toxic is really, I don't always like to use it because it's really general and a very, like, heated word, but it's not beneficial to humanity into the environment. It can be harmful.
Right? And doesn't it then turn into, like, methane gas that gets released?
Turn into what?
Scraps go into the... To methane gas?
It does, and it absolutely does, which is a huge issue for one of the biggest issues for global warming. That said, the Flathead Valley does have a whole system set up for methane, like capturing the methane from there and using it for electricity to power some of their operations, which is awesome. And I have read that those systems are often very inefficient. And still, they lose a lot of methane to the process, into the atmosphere.
Okay. So it seems like... So there was a woman, Dusty, at the DEQ that came up here and really helped us with our recycling program up here. I don't know if she's still there. Have you talked to some woman named Dusty at all?
Never heard of her, nope.
I would look into that. Like, I don't know. It might be a different, but in some, I mean, to me, it's like you're recycling food waste. You're recycling, like, maybe you should, like, I don't know if that could be, like, any way you could go at it from that. But she was really helpful. It's probably been, like, 10 years now when they were trying to get a recycling program off the ground up here and kind of giving us some guidance. And she really talked about starting out with, recycling drives instead of like just trying to get a permanent recycle, which we eventually got. There's a really nice big building at our dump now, and then there's a little drop off by the annex in town. I would still like to see recycling at our green boxes because we definitely produce more recycling than we do garbage at my house, and it piles up because I have to take it to town instead of just to the green boxes, which I have way more access to. But anyway, that's a little separate conversation. But anyway, yeah, I don't know if she has anything to do with that or not, but I know she was really helpful that's the only person I've dealt with at the Montana DEQ in Helena, right? Is where they are in Helena?
Yep, that's correct. And that's good to hear that, you know, your experience with the DEQ was positive.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so anything else you want to say about that?
No, I think that's pretty... covers the basics.
Okay. So, you know, usually, Alyssa, I start out the show asking about your very first gardening experience. But we've been talking for a while, but we'll still get to it now. So do you want to tell us, like, what was your first gardening experience about? Like, were you a kid, an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? You're from Whitefish.
I am.
Did your parents have a garden?
No, they did not have a garden. They still try sometimes and then get frustrated and stuff. But really my first gardening experience started around the age of 17, probably. My good friend, Kaylee Brown, and just a couple people I was surrounded by, we just started getting into gardening and trying to learn together and experiment. And it just seemed like a really cool thing to start growing things. Yeah, and just started experimenting from there. And
what'd you grow?
So mostly vegetables. You know, we wanted to grow our food and see what it took. And, you know, initially it was intimidating. You know, as a new gardener, it's like, well, I have no idea what I'm doing, you know. But when it was with a few friends, it was like, okay, well, we can bounce ideas off of each other and really try and just grow together through it, you know.
Nice. I like that. So did you just do it at, like, one of your friends' houses? Or, like, where were you guys growing?
I think, you know,
or everybody had their
later. There was one specific place that, you know, just a friend's parents' piece of land near us said, hey, yeah, go ahead, grow a garden, because they didn't live there. They just owned this land. And it was a beautiful, beautiful piece of land just outside of town. So really my two friends started a garden out there, and it kind of just caught on with me, and I started experimenting too and being part of that a little bit, and then some of my house. And yeah, we kind of just got into it together.
Nice. So then how'd you learn how to garden organically? Like, from your friends, or when you went to U of M, or some other way?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really long process of just, I'm a big proponent of trying it yourself and screwing up a lot, you know, and reading, trying it, seeing, oh, that didn't work. Why? Figuring it out myself, you know. Maybe it wasn't the right kind of soil. Maybe it's not right for this climate. Maybe I just didn't harden the plants off long enough. Who knows? Kind of just hit and miss throughout the years, and also a lot of reading, and some supplemented definitely through my experience at the Pease Farm in Missoula at the college. I did a full year's worth of farming out there, an internship.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I had both Neva come on from U of M's EVST program, and then I had, I want to say her name is Ellie, from the MUD program, and she
talked
a little bit
about. Yeah, those are two
about,
great women. I know both of them.
Yeah. I met them at the Aero conference last fall.
Yeah.
Which is going to be in Kalispell this fall, so I'm pretty excited about that. Well, tell us about something that grew well, maybe probably last year. I don't know. Do you have anything that grew? My husband and I are so behind in our garden this year. We haven't really grown anything yet, but I've grown lots of lettuce.
You know, it varies from year to year. I got a stupid amount of squash. I mean, it's not necessarily what's grown well for me. It's like, it's what's really getting to the point of how much do I actually need to grow? Like, yes, I can grow, like, this is growing well, but do I need it to grow well? How many plants do I actually need? I still have squash from this winter, and it's, you know, I don't need as many as I grew.
You know, planning and being strategic and thinking about what are you spending your time growing and what's growing, and thinking about, you know, what foods has been a big theme of my show, and how to make it easier and be more effective by thinking about, you know, what am I really going to eat? What do I really like to, what do I buy at the store the most? And, you know, and then, yeah, I have that problem at times a lot too. So is there something you're excited to try this year? Something new that you haven't done before? Something different?
Yeah, sure. You know, I've been getting more interested in what Robin's doing, and Margaret, Roche has also been a large part of that. She wasn't on the show, but she's a good friend of mine. She actually lives with me. And
oh, she does? I've been begging her to get on the show one of these days.
Oh, she's great. She's fantastic. Yeah,
I know. I think she's just being shy.
Oh, I get it. She. It's, you know, it's intimidating to try, and we're young and we're trying to figure out how to speak about these things. So, yeah, I'm sure she'll be on. And
good.
So
she, you can tell her how fun it was.
I will. I'll let her know. So she lives with me, and I've been looking at the different options that they have as far as seeds, and trying to use their seeds a lot. And like Robin said on her podcast, they're starting to carry a lot more medicinals and flowers, and they carry some awesome stuff, some stuff that lots of seed companies don't carry. And I've been experimenting more with medicinals. We've got some arnica growing from them, got some echinacea and some different flowers, hollyhocks and poppies that I've never grown before. So just getting really excited about learning more about growing and cultivating my own medicinal medicine plants and kind of making my own medicine for the wintertime. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I got a lot of seeds from Robin last year, too. So almost everything we put in this year are a lot of Good Seed Company seeds. And then, if you're interested, a friend of mine up here, her name's Theodora Brennan, she started teaching, how to use medicinal herb classes last summer. I heard she just started the first one this week. She was teaching about, how to use mullein root. You might be interested in coming up here because she is just a wealth of knowledge. She's been a nutritionist in our community and has really, I've seen her do amazing things with some of her patients, or I don't know what you would call them, but people that she's worked with over the years. And she makes just great salves and different products. She built this new little thing. It's called the Apothecary, and that's where she's teaching the classes, and she's making all of her products now. And she also has a little place to stay if anybody wants to come. She's got a cute little, I think she calls it the hideaway there, where you can come, and it's just gorgeous. I mean, her place, it's like just over the hill from my house. So so medicinal is awesome.
Does she have a funny name?
She just calls it Theodora's Garden.
Okay. Good to know. She sounds awesome.
Yeah. She's amazing. She was like my episode 13 or 15 or something when I very first started. I should get her to come on again and talk about her classes. So she did the 101 last year. And so this year she's doing the 101s again. And then she's also doing a 201 for people who want to come back and learn a little more. And it's just like an all day class. You come and you get to make some products and learn about the, what you can collect. I think, she shows you what the plants look like here. And then you go into the apothecary and actually make something out of them, like a balm or a salve or a lip balm or something. When you get those things going, you might want to try that this summer, next summer or something. And it's certainly a beautiful drive from Columbia Falls up to Eureka. It's just Highway 93 is spectacular, gorgeous. And we've got lots of lakes you can jump in this heat. People are like, I heard people all day yesterday going, I can't believe I jumped in Dickey Lake. I thought it was going to be so cold, but it's so hot. It's been like 90 something degrees up here. I mean, the front page of the Inner Lake last night was, crazy record breaking heat. And I don't know.
Yeah. So. Well, as your friend in Eureka, I mean, just a quick little insert. I feel like, number one, that's really amazing. And number two, there's some pretty amazing women in the valley doing some awesome stuff. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, I was thinking there was probably some people down there in the Faja doing that too. But so I just know she firsthand has a ton of great knowledge. So anyway, tell us about something that didn't work so well last season or maybe didn't go the way you thought it was going to.
I mean, I'll just keep coming back to, what didn't grow so well, heat-loving plants. Like, I got peppers and stuff, but they're always just so puny. I don't have any heated or, like, not heated, but just any sort of covers for them or anything to increase the heat for them to grow more strongly. Yeah, so they were like, meh, but still I keep coming back to, I feel like I'm getting to this point where I'm learning, okay, how much do I actually need to grow? What do I actually like to eat? And what's going to sustain me over the winter? What are the kinds of foods that are actually good to preserve for the winter? Are they heating? Are they going to be grounding and medicinal for me at that time of year? Or is that going to be more of a summer thing that I'm going to want? And what kind of things do I need for the springtime? When I haven't grown everything to where I'm picking it, that preserving things for the spring. Just kind of getting a big picture idea of what I really need. Because you know what? In whitefish, it's pretty dang expensive to use any water. Just so you know, at this point, it's really expensive. It's almost too expensive to grow a garden, which I'm having some issues with. And I'm hopefully going to be attending some city council meetings and talking to our local people about that, because that's an issue. So anything that will help me become more efficient. Last year, I was not as efficient as I could have been.
Wow, that's interesting. Nobody's talked about that. And especially in Curtis Stone's Urban Farmer book that I'm just starting to read, he talks about, you know, that's one of the pluses of being in an urban area is that your water is so accessible. You don't have to worry about water, but that is an expense. Like, because we live on 20 acres and we have our own well, which cost us a pretty penny because it's 560 feet deep. But water can be costly. So that's interesting. Okay. I like the thought about being effective and efficient. Everybody, my listeners know I'm all into the convenience aspect, but efficiency is definitely up there as one of my priorities. So I'm going to take a little break in the show and we're going to start something called Getting to the Root of Things. But we're going to take a minute to thank our sponsors, which Robin from the Good Seed Company is one of my sponsors. And then I have a new sponsor, my friend Dacia from Simply Josephine. Now it's my first sponsor, Robin Kelson from the Good Seed Company. Welcome, Robin.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and very happy to be your sponsor. We have a large variety of locally adapted, open-pollinated, non-GMO vegetable, flower, and herb seeds. And we hope you'll enjoy visiting our website, goodseedco.net or Good Seed Montana, and seeing the resources that we offer for becoming a better gardener, a better seed saver, and a member of building resiliency around food in your community.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, my good friend, Dacia Daly from Simply Josephine.
It's all about handcrafted soaps and apron love here at Simply Josephine. Located in Montana's beautiful Tobacco Valley, I create everything from my home studio. Currently, I offer 6 different kinds of handmade soaps, 3 different salves, using wildcrafted plant medicine from right here in our beautiful valley. In addition to my body care products, I also make several styles of aprons. Everything is available at simplyjosephine.com. We want to share a little love with the Organic Gardener Podcast listeners. We're offering 15% off. Use code OGP15 at checkout. Thanks and have a beautiful day. simplyjosephine.com.
But I'm going to say, are you ready to get to the root of things, Alyssa?
I am definitely ready to get to the root of things.
Okay, cool. So which activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you got to force yourself to get out there and do?
Sure. So this might sound funny, but honestly, planting seeds.
No, I totally understand.
Right? I feel like that's the least enjoyable part for me is planning out, like actually just doing the planting. Like planning is fine and I have everything soaked, but when it comes down to it, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to spend some time planting these. I don't know why, it's just my least favorite part of it. I don't really have an explanation right now.
For me, it's like things like carrots where the seeds are super tiny and you have to spread them out really well.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you have a ton of stuff to thin.
Yeah.
I did get, Robin sent me this really yummy recipe for carrot top pesto. And then I had a woman come on, the Cheery Chef, came on for like Mother's Day, although it was a little late. And she gave another recipe for that carrot top pesto. But still, you just like, I don't know, to me, I hate to thin things and it just seems like a waste. And so those little carrot seeds, and my solution to that is get my grandkids to come up if I can. And then I'm also very spoiled because my husband gets the beds like super ready. He gets the dirt smoothed out. He mixes the compost in. He has like, you know, and partly I got to say, you know, he's kind of picky about the way he wants his beds to be. But also like nothing would get planted at my house if he didn't do the majority of the work. So I can totally feel your pain. being there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I like to plant sunflower seeds, because they're big.
Yeah.
And they're easy to plant. But no, I can totally understand that. So then on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
What's my favorite activity to do in my garden? Everything else I love. harvesting is cool. It's kind of just like on the back burner. I like harvesting if I'm going to be drying it or processing it somehow. Like if I'm just cooking it, it's cool, but it's just like a really quick, not even thinking about it, I'm harvesting it to eat it right now. But if I'm planning how I'm going to preserve it or what recipe I'm going to use to can, it's fun. I actually really like weeding, and providing, I guess just setting up a little system in there that looks beautiful, and feels really good and is beneficial to whatever birds and pollinators are in the area.
Aww, I like that. Okay. What's the best gardening advice you have ever received?
That is probably the best advice I've ever received. My I don't like to use the word ex, but my former business partner, and, you know, we grew up together, Rachel Gerber and I, very good friends since kindergarten. She and I have always bounced ideas off of each other, and we're very similar people. And last year she said, you should really try like really, really, really thick mulching, like really thick mulching with hay. And it's going to just make things so much easier and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, I'll try it. And it's completely changed the way that I garden. I no longer have any, I mean, I'm learning as I go. Lots of people may have known this already, but I just see so many people, including myself, want to have a pretty garden that looks really manicured. And when I started using really, really heavy mulch and just letting the soil biota and the soil food web go to town, it completely changed my garden. How everything grew, how much water it retained, you know, the kind of effort that I actually needed to put into my gardening. It was just like nature took over a lot of the weight and the intensity off of how much effort I needed to put in my garden. Yeah.
Perfect. There are some golden seeds there. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite tool? If you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
I'm not much of a tool person. I use my hands for a lot of things. Maybe just my shovel, like a huge shovel for getting out. Just personally in my garden, I've had a lot of people living with me and a lot of different people contributing, especially while I was gone. And random really big medicinal things pop up in there. And like this year is burdock root, insane amounts of burdock root. So if I didn't have my huge shovel, I would not be getting out these huge burdock tap roots. So this year, shovel and hands.
Awesome. Okay. So what's your favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden? You were saying that you were thinking about preserving things. Got a good preserving recipe or something for us or whatever. What's your favorite thing you like to make from the garden?
I loved the different tomato sauces that I had last year, especially the tomatillo-based sauces were really great. Really liked making them, and I ate them like 3 or 4 times a week just because it was so easy to add sauce. And I'm such a simple eater. I really like it to be quick and basic and whole. So anything with sauces and, I'm not a big recipe person. I just kind of throw together what I feel like eating and add a couple warming or cooling spices to it and call it a meal.
How do you make a tomatillo sauce? Do you just like saute onions and put the tomatillos in there and
some
spices?
I mean, the one that I used this year, I think, was actually baking the tomatillos for I don't remember the exact amount of time, probably like half an hour or so, and like charring them almost. And it just turned out amazing with the onions in there.
Really?
Yeah, baking them is like the way to go with the onions in there too. And then whatever kind of like a little bit of lemon, maybe a little garlic if you want some, and whatever herbs, and then blending them.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I'm glad I asked. I would have never thought of any of those things.
Yeah.
So bake them in the oven like at 350 on a cookie sheet, and like at 350 roast, do you wrap them up in tinfoil? Like, how do you bake a tomatillo and an onion in an oven?
Yeah, I don't think I actually did the foil. I think I literally just put them on a cookie sheet and baked them at about 350 for, I guess, like 20 to 30, at least 20 or 30 minutes. But why not foil it? Yeah, but I know that things char better and like blacken a little bit better on the outside than when there's not foil, because the foil keeps in that moisture, you know.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, no need to use foil if you don't have to. Do you have a favorite internet resource where you go to look things up?
Ooh. God, the internet is just so vast. I really just type in whatever my question is and intuitively go to what site or what answer I think is going to be the one for me, because everybody offers such different ideas and insights and perception of things. It's cool to kind of just explore them all. But if I was to say, you know, hey, check this out, I really don't have one that I can be like, hey, this is amazing, look at it, explore them. There's so many people online now, so many gardeners and so many homesteaders online now just posting some amazing information and sharing such a, you know, plethora of ideas. You can just build off of each other and experiment with, you know, what one of them offers and see if it works for you, because they probably live in a different place and they probably have different needs and different preferences. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. How about a book or a magazine? Like any kind of favorite reading material?
Yeah. You know, I'm a soil junkie. I mean, I compost for a living, and it's changed so much for me in my life, actually, in general, but, it's changed the way that I garden, because I was so focused on the plants and, you know, what I could see above ground. And now I'm just such a nerd when it comes to soil. And so I read a lot of soil books, trying to think of the one that I would recommend that everybody, dang it. I'll let you know the name of this later, because I really recommend that people read it and get a better idea of what's in the soil. Any books regarding the soil food web and the biology of the soil, especially in applicably for gardeners. Yeah.
Perfect. Do you have any business advice for listeners on how to get, like, if you were going to start over from scratch today, what would you do first to start your business? Would you reach out to the chefs first? Would you look into the DEQ part first, the, you know, getting that permit first? Or would you start composting at your home first? Like, what would be the first thing if you had to start all over again? What would you recommend?
Sure. Yeah, I've had.
Or what do you wish you knew?
Of course. Yeah, I have had multiple different people from either Montana or Oregon, what have you, ask me, you know, mentor me a little bit and like give me some ideas and some insights based off of your experience. And so I've thought about that a little bit. And it's really hard to give people, I would love to have like a step-by-step thing that I could give somebody, because it makes things so much more approachable. But there really isn't. My specific instance was so different from, say, what this young man I've been speaking with in Bozeman is experiencing, because we had Zantera, this huge, you know, company, reaching out to, you know, originally out to Rachel and us saying, hey, we want you to compost our food scraps. And so we had this opportunity from this big entity to get these big transfusions of funds going immediately. But I mean, that's not going to be the case for everybody. So this guy in Bozeman is looking at, he's talking to the waste management people in the municipalities in Bozeman and trying to kind of work with them a little bit and see if they'd be open for pickup and, you know, if they would pick up for him and he would do all the composting. Like, there's just so many different ways to approach it. I would say to people to, yeah, do their research, because now that I'm into it, you know, there's a lot of money and time and energy and passion investment into this, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And some days I'm like, wow, this was a lot more of a commitment than I realized, as far as all the different barriers that are there for people doing this. But that's why more people have to, and more people have to reach out and be like, trying to push that envelope a little bit and show the government and show these entities that are regulating that this is something important and that people want to be composting their food scraps and have these businesses present to be serving their communities. I'm trying to think of something to say as far as starting, do your research, and know that you're going to learn a lot along the way. I was not a good composter in the beginning of this. Like, I have completely different skill sets that I never had a year ago now. So just do it. Just try. And don't be afraid that's such a cliche thing to say, but because I'm afraid to fail on and off all the time. But, you know, just remember that if you fail, it's what are you failing at? You know, I mean, you're failing at this idea of what you thought you were doing, maybe, but, and I know we all have goals in mind, but what you may be just punching another little hole in this barrier of what's keeping us all from being able to have these companies. And sometimes I think, you know, this might fail, but maybe I can just push these political figures enough for them to reconsider how they're regulating the system. Yeah. So just do it. That's really all I can say. And just, and have a lot of information and research behind you, for sure. Enough confidence where you feel like, yeah, I can move forward. Yeah.
I like that. Be prepared, have some research ahead of time, but just go for it. Okay. So are you ready for my final question? It's kind of a doozy, but I think you're going to have a great answer. Here it goes. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, Alyssa, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or globally? And this can completely be your business.
Okay. Yeah, that's a really big question. I know exactly what I want to say. I think, you know, agriculture is such an obvious staple for humanity, and it's also an obvious culprit of some issues in the environment, be it, like, you know, all of these synthetic chemicals that are filtering off into our lakes and streams and water systems, which are just wreaking absolute havoc on so many ecosystems that we depend on, or be it the sheer size of some of these agricultural operations and how they're affecting the ecosystems around them and the bees and what they're using on these crops, you know, that are affecting pollinators, which we need to continue our success as humans and as agricultural providers. But just looking a little bit more deeply at our food shed. Have you, I don't know if people use the term food shed a lot, but I'm actually reading a book right now, which I would highly recommend to everybody to just check out and consider, called Rebuilding the Food Shed. And I feel like that's a really important thing for us as a culture and as society society to be tackling right now. And there's a huge local food movement. There's a huge explosion in farmers markets, which is amazing. It's so important, and there's a lot of momentum behind it. And now that we've gotten there, it's considering, okay, what's actually the most efficient for our community? What's going to provide regional food for our community? What size of operations? How many? What kinds of produce are we growing and where? I'm not a proponent of just all small-scale tiny farms that are trying to produce a ton of food for communities, because it's never going to work that way. Just kind of looking at different scales and different combinations to provide for our communities, and looking at food hubs. I'm really interested right now. I'm working with a man who you may be interested in talking with, named Casey Anderson. He's a young entrepreneur. He's 32. He just bought the Produce Depot based out of Whitefish. And he's kind of this missing link that we have in the Flathead Valley as far as distribution of this local produce. People are farming it all over the valley. There's tons of farmers in the valley, but it's hard to grow and market and distribute that food. So there's a huge issue with that right now in our personal community that he's wanting and trying to fill. So right now he's importing food from Spokane and from Washington and all, you know, where most food is grown for our country. And he's really interested in keeping the money in the community and seeing if he can come up with a system. We're now working together a little bit to come up with the system to provide an outlet for people who just want to farm and put their energy and efficiency into that. To providing and growing enough food that we can actually provide the Flathead Valley, the greater Flathead Valley, what have you, with enough food so that we don't have to be supplementing in the summertime, supplementing greens from California or what have you. It's just ridiculous and unnecessary. So just looking at the food shed, the bigger picture is really important right now. Pesticides, herbicides, all those things is something that needs to be looked at. But I feel like if we're looking at the food shed and the scales that we're working with and the actual full circle of distribution from farmer to distribution house to restaurant who's eating and using that food, consumer to me who's completing the cycle, picking up those food scraps and turning it back into nutrients for this local soil, just looking at that whole cycle, and once we address that, I feel like those synthetic chemicals and whatnot will fall away, because it doesn't make sense for more mid-scale and smaller-scale farms to be using it. It's too expensive. It's hurting our local communities and environment, so people would speak out against it if it was near us. If it's not some, you know, Mexican, you know, migrant that's picking it hundreds of miles away, that they don't get to see how it affects them and their family and how it affects the environment that they love and the community that they live in. When we bring it a little bit closer, those things will fall away. So I think that's what we need to look at.
That was awesome. I knew you were going to be a great guest. That was just beautiful, very eloquent, really well, I don't want to say research necessarily, but just intelligently put together. You really hit a lot of common threads and like things that I think, you know, why people listen to my show is because I've been trying to come up with a name for my audience, and I was thinking of calling them the Green Future Growers, because not do they don't just, you know, grow their own gardens, but like they're growing a greener future. Like we're all working to create a greener future. So I've been playing with some different ideas, but I just typed that into my phone last night. I was like, what about green future growers? And my granddaughter's like, you got to have the word futuristic in it or something like that. She's like, you got to talk about the future somehow. So
okay.
I was thinking that might be a good one. And you are definitely a green future grower. You're really, I like the way you talked about, you know, and then me completing that circle. And that's an important thing. Like nobody's talked about that on my show yet. I did meet Casey Anderson at, there was a farm finance, workshop down, in the Flathead, at the natural store.
Hmm.
And Robin was there, and Margaret was there, and Pam was there, and he was there, and he talked a little bit, and I introduced myself, and I got his phone number, and so I should reach out to him again, because I asked him if he'd be on my show.
Yeah, he's an amazing human.
Then I haven't, for some reason, I don't have business cards. It's just so funny, the graphic designer in me. I've made so many business cards for other people, and I have not ever printed any for me. So I didn't have anything to give him that day for me, but... yeah, I will reach out to him again. Cool. Yeah, I love that idea. And I think that's great that he's trying to do that and do a lot of local get food from local people and kind of change that. What was I going to say else that you said there? Do you just want to explain really quick what is a food shed?
Yeah.
Does that mean like our... like a watershed, like a food shed, mm-hmm. where we grow our food?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a play off of watershed. Yeah, that's what I've been trying to kind of illustrate for people in the area. It's the whole cycle that the nutrients and the actions and everything that take place in a region or in a town or in a community, a county, what have you. So just kind of what I explained, like starting, I like to start with the farmers. I just do. So who's growing your food? That part of the food shed, that part of what makes up, who, how, and what is providing and making up the food that we eat in our vicinity. So the farmers, them growing, how they're growing it, and then moving on to the distributors, which is, in this case, what Casey's trying to fill, how it's being distributed. Even small, minute details like what truck is being used to pick up that produce. How are we getting that produce from farmer to distributor? Because if farmers are driving their old crappy, understandably, you know, why they own them, because it makes more sense, truck, in a lot of different ways. But if all of those farmers are taking their trucks and dropping them off at the farmer's market or going all these different places, that's not efficient. That's not any more efficient than a lot of larger scale operations. So just kind of looking at how much crap we give these large scale operations, well, it's like, well, how are these small scale operations working? How are they distributing? How efficient are they really, you know, at providing what we need? And just kind of helping fine tune those things and provide, I guess, a stream and a direction that is efficient and is effective at providing these communities the food and enough of what we need. And then moving on from the farmer, you know, to the distributor, once it makes it there, who's distributing the food? How are they distributing it? Who, and is the food being processed? Is it, you know, is it meat? And is it becoming like a sauce instead of just a whole food? Kind of looking at where that processing happens. So that's another thing that we need to look at in this valley, is getting more processing centers in our region. Instead of people selling these mass amounts of whatever kind of product out to be manufactured or processed out of state, we need to be processing our, I guess, quote-unquote value-added foods in the vicinity of Montana. It's going to provide jobs. It's going to provide, you know, just a closer, more intimate outlet for people who are trying to create products. And then from there, you know, how are those producers or the distributors distributing? Who are they distributing to? And those farmers, what kind of food are they using? How are they using it? Are they thinking seasonally? Are they trying to adjust what they're making based off of the season and what's available to them? Or are they trying to stick to the tried and true, you know, tomato dinner in the middle of winter? It's just looking at this big picture, and then what are they doing with their food waste? How efficient are they, you know, and who's taking that waste and what's being done with it? And then taking it back to what I do and really taking all of the nutrients and the energy, it's literally just energy, nitrogen, phosphorus, whatever, that hasn't been used, that we originally produced for our bodies but wasn't used for that, and putting it back towards producing more food. It's energy that's being put back into the soil to continue to try and be efficient and grow in a smart way for our communities. Just looking at the food shed is really just a really large scale vision of what it means to be food secure for a region and for a town or a community.
Perfect. And then, you know, it kind of reminded me, just as a little side note, I don't want to talk too long, but so they have this new program in Montana. Well, I don't know how long, you know, it's probably been going on for at least 5 years, where the kids get a healthy snack at the end of a day at a lot of our lower income schools, which I would think almost most schools in Montana qualify, maybe not Whitefish, but certainly the ones up here. And when I worked in Browning, and I know a lot of anyway, the kids, so a couple of days a week, or maybe even 5 days a week at around 2 p.m. or sometime in the afternoon, the kids get a healthy snack, and it's usually like either celery sticks or broccoli sticks or fruit. And, you know, here you're getting these weird pineapple things in a plastic wrapper in the middle of February, or watermelon, or just some really obscure things that I think could be. And then the other thing that drives me crazy, you know, carrots in a package. Mm-hmm. And of course, they have to have the ranch dressing with them.
Yes.
So just, you know, one of my, when I was a Head Start, I'd go crazy because we always had to have ranch dressing, and the cooks were always like worried about the fat content and ranch dressing, and we couldn't have this. And I'm like, why can't we ever have a different salad dressing? You know, why can't we ever have a different dip, you know, some hummus or some other kind of nutritious thing for the kid? Why does it always have to be this prepackaged ranch dressing that... And then just the whole belief that kids aren't going to eat carrot sticks or broccoli or celery or anything if they don't have that ranch dressing to dip it in. But then my point was the local food too. Like, why are they eating weird watermelon in Montana when there's snow on the ground and, you know, it's like, Lord only knows where it came from. But
yeah,
anyway, you know, I'm glad they're getting some healthy food, but I just think it could be a little more locally produced or something. Okay. We're like almost an hour and a half.
Oh my gosh.
And I have another interview that was supposed to start at 9 that I'm kind of late for.
Oh, geez, I'm sorry.
She sent me a text, said she's late too. No worries. Because you've just been full of golden seeds, and just like, you know, I always talk about my avatar, the, you know, like my ideal listener, and you are definitely like right in there. And I'm sure my listeners are going to be super happy to hear from you. So just my last question is, do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Just simple. It will change your life for the better. That's all I have to say. Just do it. It'll change you. Yeah.
Cool. Tell everybody how to connect with you. You have a Facebook page?
I have a Facebook page, and right now I'm excited. I'm working on a website right now with a couple of different young business photographers and, website designers in the area. So soon we'll have a website up, and I've got things at Farmers Market. You know, call me. I'm happy to talk, and just happy to connect with people about questions or ideas or whatever they're needing. I want to hear from the community.
Okay. And, you know, speaking of connecting, my Earth Day guest, not this year, but last year, was this woman, Heather Wood, who's in Olympia, Washington. And she had a much smaller scale composting business, but she might be able to, somebody you might want to connect with, and you guys, she might have some kind of help for you or something. She kind of like called them compost tubs, and she would ride around on her bicycle and pick up compost from people's houses and deliver it. But I don't know, she, you know, it might have changed since last year.
What's her name?
She's just a really cool, her name's Heather Wood, Wood, and she's in Olympia, Washington.
Awesome. I'll look her up.
So, well, thank you so much, Alyssa. Say hi to Margaret. Tell her it was fun.
Yeah.
And we'll get her on because she's a wealth of knowledge. And just, you know, she taught me how to save seeds at the Pennyroyal Collective last year. And just, I know she knows a ton and just, she must be a little, and I don't blame her. I can totally understand that. So,
yeah. No, Margaret's rad. And definitely get her on. Another person, I don't know if you've talked to Pam about it, but she's good friends with Pam, is Barb. What's her last name? Barb is really good friends, and she's got a flower CSA. She lives right next to me. And I will email her name to you, but she's awesome. She's
cool.
Been a really great wealth of information for me and an influence for me. So, yeah.
That would be awesome because I know I have a lot of listeners who have reached out to me and told me they're very interested in the flower farmer piece because that's like my goal is to be a flower farmer. My husband does the vegetables and if I grow anything, it's flowers. So that would be fantastic.
Cool.
Okay. You have a great day. Stay cool.
You too. Bye.
All right. This is Jackie Marie Beyer, and I am just hoping that you're as excited to be learning and gardening this spring as I am. And so I'm really wondering what you're up to this spring. And I am super excited to announce that I am finally going to launch my Facebook group, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. So I really want to hear about your journey, and I really hope that you will come there and share your questions, your successes, your challenges, your pictures, your connect with the other listeners in the audience and, what's your vision for the future or what's your vision for your garden, for your organic oasis? You know, are you planting flowers? What are you doing? You know, what project are you taking on this spring, this summer? You know, I really want to learn, what do you want to know? Is there, what kind of guests do you like? You know, who have you enjoyed? Who would you like to hear more of? You know, what topics are you really enjoying? You know, is it raising honeybees or planting perennials or, what kind of seeds are you looking for? You know, are they annuals, perennials? You know, what kind of vegetables, what kind of herbs are you planting? What flowers? Do you have any questions that we can answer? You know, what guests have you liked the most? You know, so what is there something you want me to find out? Like, I'm really going to try to be as active in Facebook, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook page and the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. So, if you're interested in, learning more and reaching out and connecting with other people, especially, the great thing about it is all of a sudden, you might meet three people who are in your area. Just like since I started my podcast, I met Robin Kelson and Laura Behenna. So it was so fun to see them last week. And Pamela Lund, who, if you haven't heard her episode, she's just got a great story. Robin's been in the top 10 since she aired. But to meet these, people, and then I went to the Aero Conference and met more people that are living locally near me here in Montana that I never knew till I started my podcast. And so if you join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group, you'll probably meet people in your area. And then maybe I'll be able to find some people from the other states because I think I'm up to like state 20 or 21 still. So there's still more states that I haven't interviewed people from than states that I have. One of these days I'm going to read that list and try to get some people, some listeners. Listeners always make great guests. I think you've all got more knowledge than you think to share and some answer that somebody else has been looking for. So if you want to come on and share your gardening journey, I'm always looking. But today I really want to talk about, join our group. Let me know what can I do for you. Even if you don't want to do the Facebook thing, I totally understand. Or if you have another channel that you like, reach out to me, email me, go to the website, you can connect with me. There's the get in touch page. There's a listener survey on there where you can, which basically is just easy questions about, what's your biggest challenge that I can help you with. But, just most of all, I hope if you want to, you will come join the Facebook group, connect with me and just, let's change the world together. Thanks for listening and remember to